Housing prices have peaked, according to this expert who called the 2005 top. The Fed admits I'm right. There's more risk in tech stocks now than there was at the dot-com bubble peak, and a CPI preview. All that and more on today's show. I'm your host, Steve Van Meter, and thanks for joining me today because we're picking back up on this housing warning that first started with what was going on in China that is still getting worse, and we're going to pick that up in a future episode. Then there's Zillow, whose automated buying program bought too high and now wants to sell at a loss. And today, we have one of the experts who called the peak in 2005 is telling you the peak is in. Let's pick the story up here. Strong housing demand, a mirage, says analyst who called the previous crash. Zelman, who called the market top in 2005, there's no supply deficit. Wow, I mean, that's all we're hearing is there's a shortage of supply and home prices, well, they could fall. Everyone seems to be betting on the house, on a new home these days. Multi-billion dollar private equity firms, Joe Schmo house flippers, and even savvy tech firms. Everyone except Ivy Zelman, that is. The analyst who called the top of the housing market in 2005 is once again waving a red flag. It's beyond contrarian. She's pretty much in a category of one. Well, maybe some of us on this show join her. The perception that housing is drastically undersupplied and that a strong demographic picture lies ahead is creating a false sense of security, according to a report by Zelman's firm entitled Cradle to Grave. By our math, both the single family and multifamily production are already ahead of normalized demand. Now, can we imagine that? That production is ahead of demand and estimates of a housing deficit are grossly exaggerated. No, we don't have a deficit, Zelman, who founded Zelman Associates, said in an interview with The Real Deal. We have a pipeline of activity that would put us in an overbuilt situation relative to normalized demand. And that's crazy because the market says just the exact opposite. And all this price war and bidding, how much of it is being inflated by iBuyers? She's referring to Zillow. Basically bidding against the teacher, the fireman, the policeman, said Zelman, who is promoting her new book, Give Me Shelter, Hard Calls Plus Soft Skills from a Wall Street Trailblazer. Phoenix is among the riskiest markets, particularly for builders, because of all the buying by investors, she said, also citing Austin, Dallas, and Houston. Her firm's report makes the case that U.S. population and household growth will ultimately determine housing demand. Population growth, the crucial underpinning of future housing demand, is on a troubled trajectory. And this makes perfect sense because if you're going to need more homes in the future, well, what do you need? People to live in them. So you can't just have infinitely rising home prices unless you have an infinitely expanding population. And we already know some of those demographics are not all that favorable. Let's continue on. The U.S. population has grown just 7.4% growth in the past decade, the second slowest rate on record, the report says. Household growth in the country was the slowest in history at 8.7%. Birth rates are declining, and Zelman estimated that more 20 to 39-year-olds live with their parents or grandparents in 2020 than 2010. Wow. And here's a great chart that shows Zillow relative to lumber prices, because if you want to know where housing prices are going, well, take a look at lumber, and you can see it's making this massive topping pattern that looks like lumber prices are set to crash, which would imply that Zillow's, well, going a lot lower. And here you can see a great chart that overlays the University of Michigan's is now a good time to buy a house. So this is a sentiment survey that we talk about on a regular basis, and it polls people who are buying homes, and it says, is this a good time to buy? And they're no, and not just no, now multi-decade lows. And what we see here in this chart by Mac10 off of Twitter is when you get a peak in these home builder stocks, well, it suggests the S&P is coming down with it. So this is pretty serious. And now let's take a look at my chart, which is the S&P Case-Shiller U.S. National Home Price Index and against crude oil prices. And what do we find is that when energy prices start to get too high, it slows down the economy, and then you'll see a shift of consumer spending to energy and other things, leaving them with less discretionary income to afford rising home prices. And you see housing prices came down here during the dot-com bubble, moving into the great financial crisis. What do we see? Rising energy prices put a stop to home prices. And as oil took off, which some people would love to hear because they're betting on that, home prices tanked. You see then the next time home prices come rallying out from the great financial crisis, and what puts a dent in that? High energy prices. Once again, you see that here in about 2018, crude oil prices rising starts to put a dent in housing prices. Now they're going vertical. Everyone thinks they're going to keep going up. And what is crude doing? Telling you that perhaps, well, this story is going to end just like it always does, with lower home prices. Now, for those of you following the community tab, I have figured out, thanks to my fans on Twitter, how to properly resize some of these images. So I'll put that in the community tab for you to take a look at. Plus, I'll answer the question, if you're wondering, what happened to Steve's hair? We'll just call it Jay Bravo's worst nightmare. Check the community tab out for that story as well. Let's continue on, because the Fed admits I was right. I know, that's crazy that they would actually do such a thing. Check this out. Here we see off Twitter today, breaking market news. Fed's Bullard, going forward, we are not really looking at much improvement in the labor force participation rate. And just as a reminder, the labor force participation rate is a percentage of people who are participating in the labor force. So they look at the total people that are age eligible that could be working or looking for a job, and then they determine what percentage of people are actually working, what percentage of people are looking for a job, and they add those two together. That becomes the labor force participation rate. And what we're learning, as I talked about when the Fed announced their taper, is it's becoming very clear that the Fed is biasing toward inflation and not their alleged dual mandate, which includes full employment. This tells us now that the Fed is saying they don't think that we're going to see a big rebound in employment, and I'll show you why. Let's head over back to the charts, and we'll go to this one. We looked at this one before, the labor force participation rate against the velocity of money. The velocity of money is the number of times money changes hands or used in a transaction over a given period of time. And you can see as money stops moving as much, slows down, what does the labor force participation rate do? It falls. So it tells us the money moving matters a lot, and it's moving, well, at about a snail's pace. And there's a reason why, as we look at the Fed's balance sheet. So what we do is we take the monetary base and invert it. That's why the minus sign's there. And the monetary base, now keep in mind, this rises, again, shown inverted, when the Fed is engaging in large-scale asset purchases or quantitative easing. Now, we know they're going to taper this, but that just means they're going to slow their purchases. It doesn't mean they're going to stop. And so when you invert this, what you see is as the Fed does more quantitative easing and expands its balance sheet, it's really bad for the labor market. In fact, if history should repeat, what this suggests is as the monetary base continues to rise, again, it will continue to do that even as the Fed tapers. It's just a slowing. What that means is that labor force participation rate could come crashing down, and the Fed, well, they're not going to do anything about it, at least not for now. Now, we'll come back to the story from Friday on the food shortage, because I want to show you this story is going to go into 2022. What we're talking about today are going to be major, major headlines next year. Here's why. Check this out. What do we have? Ammonia prices are skyrocketing. Now, why does this matter? Why would something like ammonia have anything to do with what goes on our tables? Well, it's really simple. Ammonia goes into fertilizer. And if ammonia prices are rising, guess what? Fertilizer prices are rising. And if fertilizer prices are rising, guess what that means for crop prices? Because farmers who are paying more for fertilizer are going to need to pass that price on. So if you want to have a leading indicator of where food prices are going, you start back with ammonia. In fact, you can go further back to crude oil, because you have that goes into ammonia, which goes into fertilizer, which goes into food prices, and telling us in 2022, you're going to see a massive amount of headlines about high food prices. And why does that matter? Because it is disinflationary. Remember, if we get inflation when it's broad-based and people can afford goods and services, but if all of our spending is kind of like the stock market, which I'm going to show you in a minute, that is way concentrated like it was during the tech bubble, what you'll find is as people's budgets go into high food prices, energy prices, and rents, it leaves almost as little to no discretionary spending, and that's how the bubble bursts. All right, let's take a look at the story about how stocks are now in the danger zone beyond where they were at the dot-com bubble peak. Here you see the five largest stocks in the S&P 500. That's Facebook, Apple, Amazon, Microsoft, and Google. Netflix is out. It used to be Fang, now it's Fang. Anyways, you see the five largest stocks in the S&P 500 are at 24.53%, which blows out the great financial crisis peak at 14% and the dot-com bubble peak at 16.6. Last time we saw anything like this was, well, back in the 1960s and 70s, and this is not good news. Here you see the largest industry weighting by the top five stocks in the S&P 500. There it is, Facebook, Amazon, Apple, Microsoft, and Google. There it is, with Apple at the top, 24.2%, eclipsing any other stocks weighting in a major indice. Now, if you're saying, well, that's not really a big deal, it is a huge deal, because when people eventually sell, when there's some risk off event, well, it's kind of like everybody being in a movie theater and having one door and the fire start to burn. Everybody starts to funnel through one exit, and that means there's no buyers at the bottom. This is actually a dangerous structure to see from the equity market. And if you're worried about position of your portfolio, be sure to check out that link above for Portfolio Shield. If your money manager is not doing what you need, or your investment advisor, check it out. Anyways, let's continue on, because here you see consumer confidence composite. This from Real Investment Advice that shows consumer confidence against the S&P 500. And when consumer confidence falls, well, that's simple. It means spending's coming down. And when spending comes down, earnings go down, profits go down, and that's right, stocks go down with it. But the story doesn't end there, because the market is just one of margin debt. And as margin debt's growing, and that's when people are borrowing money from securities dealers and using it to buy stocks. You can see the tech bubble, as margin debt rallied up, so did stocks. And as the 50-week percent change of that, as shown here by MAC-10, peaked, well, that's marked the peak or near-term peak of the tech bubble. Housing bubble is the same. People went crazy buying stocks, hoping that someone else would buy them in the future. So they borrowed money to buy them, and it shot them higher. And what happened? Margin debt went up, stocks went up, and the 50-week percent change, well, that peaked, signified a near-term peak of the market, and then it came down as margin debt did too. But not to be outdone, because if it doesn't work two times, go for it, maybe the third. And sure enough, margin debt drove up higher to record, by far record all-time highs. We're talking double the prior peak of the great financial crisis. Stocks have gone with it, and you can see the 50-week percent change is heading down, suggesting we could be at a peak, and that's a dangerous thing, again, for this underlying structure. And we can see that commercial hedgers, which is the smart money, have changed their position. They're now super short on the equity market, which is shown in blue. It's going back to the lowest point since we see here in 2009, and they're long the bond market, and there's their insurance policy. They're betting on lower interest rates and lower stock prices. We'll see if they're right. The smart money is often on the right side of the trade, not always, but most of the time. And here we can see the VAR shock, this from Bloomberg, that realized implied volatility hits a record. Now, why does this matter? Because, well, we talked about a doom loop on the Sunday night charts building, and you can see that when realized implied volatility shoots higher, well, there's your great financial crisis. And then you can see another move here that led to a decline in stocks, and now you're seeing it build again at record levels, suggesting that what's going to happen is going to be a massive unwinding in the equity market at a time that we turn over here to Hedgeopia, where speculators are still very short volatility, betting on higher stock prices and lower volatility, and the underlying structures of the market are saying, no, something bad is going to happen. And at a time when the Fed is set to taper, and we go back to, again, one of these charts from MAC-10, and what do we see here? The 30-year bond yield against the Fed's balance sheet, and as the Fed tapers, you can see here, in 2011, what happens? Yields go down. And what does that mean? I wanted to ask you, what do you remember what lower interest rates mean to financial conditions? They're tightening. And what do yields do in their relationship with equity prices? They lead. They lead the equity market to the downside. So when you see or understand that there are events that could lead to lower interest rates, you start to understand that there's a risk off move coming, and you start to see it in the data. You start to see it in the charts. Let's continue back to what we've got here. Then again, the Fed tapered again after QE. Looks like two, or this is, must be three here. And what do you see? Yields go down. And then, of course, we see that with the pandemic, yields go down. And now the Fed balance sheet is set to slow its growth. And what does that mean for interest rates? They go down. What does that mean for equity prices? Likely to go down. And then you come back to, where is that VAR shock? There it is. And you kind of get the idea that something big is coming. And let's take a look at the position in the bond market by speculators. I'll scroll up here where we're at on Hedgeopia. And what do we see? One of the largest 1 week moves lower on 10-year treasury note futures. And what do? They went massively short the 10-year treasury, betting on higher interest rates as rates fell, and they backed off their 30-year shorts. So you see speculators are on the wrong side of what is about to come. And now let's take a look at the CPI preview, because the market's betting on higher consumer prices, but are they likely to keep going? Can prices continue to go higher, or are there indications that we could finally see the CPI cooling off? Well, let's take a look, and here we go. With the CPI year over year against crude oil prices year over year, and you see a very, very nice relationship. Now, there are times where crude peaks, you can see back here in the early 90s, and consumer prices stayed a little high before they went down, but crude led lower. Here you can see, again, crude started to fall, consumer prices lagged a little bit. Here, crude has fallen and CPI fell with it. Crude started to fall, CPI hung tight going into the dot-com bubble, then gave up. And you can see crude leading lower here through 2004 through 6 or 7. And what happened? CPI slowly and then all of a sudden rapidly went down. Crude led lower in the great financial crisis. You see crude leading and with CPI following here. Crude fell and the CPI went up a little bit higher, then fell. Again, here you see crude leading the CPI, crude leading the CPI, crude leading the CPI. What do you think is happening now? Crude leading the CPI, suggesting that while the CPI may stay up here, the risk to the consumer prices is the downside, and that's what the bond market's starting to sniff out. That's what the speculators are betting on. And how do you know that we're likely to see crude oil prices continue to slow on a year-over-year basis? Well, we go back a year ago, and now we're in here, and what are we seeing? We're seeing crude prices rising. Remember, I said this would happen in late, I said earlier this year this would happen late this year. Here we are, crude oil prices are rising from where they were a year ago. And what does that mean in terms of the year-over-year comp? That the year-over-year comp is headed lower, and that eventually translates into lower consumer prices. Now, I mean, I shouldn't say lower consumer prices as much as disinflation. And of course, we know the bond market absolutely loves it. You tie that in with a taper, you tie that in with a VAR shock, you tie that in to the housing market peak, and now you start to see how this thing can unwind. Anyways, appreciate all of you being fans. And we, of course, like I said, I'll put some of these charts up in the community tab. We'll address the hair issue. We'll call it Clippergate. And we'll see you on Wednesday for the next show. I'm Steve Admeter. Thanks for watching. Oh, and I forgot to put up the thing so I could do the close. So hang tight with me as we get that ready. And here we go. All right. Nope, still not ready. The content of this video provides educational information only, not intended to provide investor or other advice. This material is not to be construed as a recommendation or solicitation to buy or sell any security, financial instrument, or to participate in any particular trading strategy. This video was prepared by Steve Van Meter. Personal capacity opinions expressed in this video that I'm going to do not affect the view of Atlas Financial Advice, Inc. or Steve Van Meter Financial.